I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Falling in love is the best feeling in the world. You see stars, you feel giddy. But sometimes that makes you do crazy things. And sometimes that means murder. Just because a story starts out with once upon a time doesn't mean it ends happily ever after. Welcome to Crazy in Love, a production of KT Studios and iHeartRadio. Today's guests are true crime producer Jeff Shane and journalist and podcast host Connor Powell. Connor is a journalist and podcast host whose latest podcast is Lords of Soccer, How FIFA Stole the Beautiful Game and the Largest Corruption Scandal in the World. He's also host of KT Studios' upcoming podcast, Death Island. You can follow Connor on Twitter at Connor M. Powell. Episode 46, The Case of the Overachiever, The Tiger Parents, and The Deadly Double Life. Bic and Han Pan were a perfect example of the American dream. Both had immigrated to Toronto from Vietnam in the late 1970s. They found work at a car manufacturing company and got married in a small ceremony in 1986. Soon after, they had a daughter, Jennifer, and 3 years later, a son, Felix. By 2004, the Pans had saved enough to buy a large home with a two-car garage on a quiet residential street in Markham. Markham is an upscale suburb around 30 minutes outside of Toronto. Mr. Pan drove a Mercedes and Mrs. Pan drove a Lexus. While the money, house, and cars were nice, the Pans' greatest achievement was their children, especially their daughter Jennifer. A social butterfly with a distinctive high-pitched laugh, Jennifer could seamlessly float between different social circles at school. Standing at 5'7", classmates considered her, quote, pretty but plain. She rarely wore makeup and never took off her round, wireframe glasses. After receiving straight A's in high school, per her father's decision, Jennifer attended an elite college to study medicine. Although he hoped she'd be a doctor, Mr. Pan decided Jennifer didn't have the stomach for it. He urged her instead to be a pharmacist. After receiving her bachelor's, Jennifer began attending a prestigious pharmacy program in Toronto. She also spent her time volunteering at a hospital. She was truly the daughter her parents dreamed she would be. Here's Jeff.
Jennifer was really committed from a young age to lots of activities and extracurriculars. She started piano lessons at the age of 4. She also became a world-class figure skater. And her sights were set on the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver. And things were going well until she tore a ligament in her knee, which basically shattered her dreams. But that didn't stop her from continuing to practice. Some nights in elementary school, Jennifer would come home from skating practice at 10 p.m., do homework till around midnight, and then head to bed. And remember, elementary school, she's what, you know, 10 to 12 years old?
And she was a good student. She expected to be named valedictorian of her middle school. And when she didn't get it, she was both shocked and confused. But instead of talking about her heartbreak, she told everyone she was okay. It's something she later referred to as her happy mask.
Connor, what do you make of this overwhelming pressure that not only Jennifer's parents put on her, but it sounds like she put on herself a little bit?
Yeah, I think anytime you're talking about wanting to be the valedictorian in middle school and also trying to compete for Winter Olympics and ice skating, you're talking about a pressure-filled young life. And I think that's what you see about her story from an early age. I mean, she was just in this cauldron of pressure, both probably academically, athletically, and then also I'm sure her own background culturally, there was a lot of pressure to sort of be the daughter they wanted her to be, both as a student, as an athlete, but also as a young Vietnamese girl.
We did a little bit of research and found that 61% of American middle schoolers feel pressure to get good grades, and 21% of those students also feel the pressure to get involved in extracurricular activities, and another 21% of those students feel the pressure to be good at sports. So there definitely is some pressure, but it sounds a little bit like Jennifer was in the minority in the sense that she was feeling pressure kind of in every facet of her life, not just getting good grades, but also being good at sports and being involved in kind of things outside of the day-to-day of school.
All kids put pressure on themselves to do well. Parents put pressure on their kids to learn and to be athletic and, you know, not just to have fun. But I think anytime you start talking about Olympic dreams, that's just a whole nother level of pressure for any young girl, particularly one that's, you know, in middle school.
Yeah, Connor, you host a podcast in the sports world, kind of about the pressures probably some athletes face. Can you tell us about that and how that might relate to this story?
Yeah, the Lords of Soccer podcast is all about the corruption within FIFA. And one of the things that we see in global soccer that FIFA has sort of lorded over, you know, this entire program of building national teams to compete for a World Cup championship is that countries like Qatar, which is going to host the upcoming World Cup in a few months, you know, they were literally spending millions of dollars going around the world, particularly in Africa, looking for the next big soccer player, the next big thing that they could both market and then also bring home to play for Qatar's national team. And I mean, they were going through like hundreds of thousands of kids every year auditioning these kids. And so you see this type of pressure from an early age, not only in Olympic sports like figure skating, but also in other sports, whether it's, you know, baseball, football, but particularly in global soccer. And that's a part of what we talk about, the way FIFA has responded to this, that, you know, they essentially oversee the system that they don't really care, that they don't really care what happens to these young kids.
Right. I think people forget when they're fans of the sport that it's ultimately just a machine made to make money, right?
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, there's an old saying that sports shouldn't be covered like politics or the financial industry. But the reality is like sports is a financial juggernaut. It is the people who run these sports, they run it to make money. And so there's a lot of pressure on kids and then teenagers and then young adults to perform at these incredible levels. And, you know, the amount of money we're talking about in the World Cup with FIFA or in the Olympics, I mean, you're talking about huge amounts of money. And unfortunately, with that comes a lot of pressure.
Despite her parents' strict no boys rule, Jennifer couldn't help but fall in love. In 2003, during her junior year of high school, Jennifer went on a band trip to Europe. After a performance in a concert half filled with smokers, Jennifer suffered an asthma attack. She started panicking and was led outside to the tour bus and almost blacked out. It was then a trumpet player, Daniel Wong, gently held her shoulder. He told her to take deep breaths. Daniel missed the rest of the show to make sure she was okay. "He pretty much saved my life," she later said. "It meant everything." Daniel was a senior. He was goofy and extroverted, the opposite of Jennifer. He had a big laugh, a wide smile, and a little belly. Jennifer thought it was cute. The pair started dating the summer after her junior year, but her parents were none the wiser. Here's Connor.
Now, Jennifer and Daniel dated in secret for years. As she got older, Jennifer would make up elaborate lies to tell her parents so that she could go and see Daniel, like she was sleeping at a classmate's house closer to school. It's actually not that uncommon to do what Jennifer did. Based on our research, about 1 in 5 people worldwide have a secret lover. I think the difference, of course, is that she's a teenager at this point, and a secret lover when you're an adult is a very different thing, but she obviously was keeping the secret not only from her family, but presumably probably from a lot of other people as well.
Yeah, Connor, and this secret lasted for years. By the time Jennifer was 24, after years of living this double life, Daniel grew tired of the relationship dynamics. He was sick of Jennifer being terrified that her parents would find something out about their relationship. He told her to figure out her life and broke up with her. And understandably, Jennifer was heartbroken. I mean, this was her first love, and she had these parents who she didn't really connect with. I think she felt very shell-shocked by this ending of the relationship. And what made matters even worse is shortly thereafter, she learned that Daniel was seeing a girl named Christine. After finding out about Christine, Jennifer came to Daniel with a somewhat alarming story. She told him that a man had knocked on her door and flashed what looked like a police badge. When she opened the door, a group of men then rushed in and gang raped her in her home. Then, a few days later, she said she received a bullet in an envelope in her mailbox. She was terrified, understandably so, and what she told Daniel is that she thought both instances she suspected were warnings from Christine to leave Daniel alone. Daniel didn't believe Jennifer, but it did get the two of them talking and they got back together. I mean, that sounds like a crazy, desperate move to get your ex back to, if this didn't happen, to make up a story that severe.
Yeah, I mean, if it didn't happen, that is an incredible story to tell to get somebody to talk to you. I think the other thing that's so striking about Jennifer is that even at age 24, she was lying to her parents about a relationship, which you would think at some point, even, you know, as she got older, that she'd be willing to share with her parents that she was in a relationship. And why she isn't willing to do that, I think, is something that it sends alarm bells about what type of life Jennifer is leading at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know the ins and outs of the Pan household, but I wonder if the pressure was from her parents or from Jennifer herself. Like, would they have been understanding if she just told them the truth?
Yeah, and the question is was she embarrassed to tell her parents at age 24 that she was in a relationship, or was she embarrassed to tell her parents at that age that she was in a relationship with this Daniel guy? And what was it about him that maybe she was afraid to show her parents who he was or to tell her parents who he was?
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, starting May 6th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On November 8th, 2010, Jennifer sat in her bedroom watching Gossip Girl and John and Kate Plus 8. Mr. Pan was downstairs watching the news. Mrs. Pan went out to line dance with a friend, and by 9:30 p.m., everyone was home. At 10:05, three armed men entered the house through the front door. Both Mr. and Mrs. Pan were brought downstairs at gunpoint. The men were demanding money. Jennifer was tied up with a shoelace and dragged from room to room as the men looked for valuables. Desperate and scared, Jennifer gave the men $2,500 in cash she saved from piano lessons. She also gave them an additional $1,100 from her mother's nightstand. But this was not enough. The men grew angry. They dragged Jennifer upstairs and tied her to a banister. Her parents begged the men not to harm their daughter. Mr. and Mrs. Pan were then brought to the basement and covered with a blanket. The assailant shot Mr. Pan twice, once in the shoulder and then in the face. They shot Mrs. Pan three times in the head. 18 minutes after coming inside, the three men ran out the front door. Tied up upstairs, Jennifer was able to pull out her cell phone and call 911. Take a listen to a portion of the call.
So yeah, that 911 call is pretty alarming and disturbing. But despite that, police immediately thought the scene looked off. First off, the keys to Mr. Pan's Lexus were in plain view by the front door. If this were indeed a home invasion, the detectives wondered why the intruders didn't take the car. They also didn't take either Mr. or Mrs. Pan's wallets. And most bizarre, why would they leave Jennifer, a witness, alive? Another question they had was, how did Jennifer call 911 if she was in fact tied up?
Not surprisingly, the police had that question as well, that very same question. Back at the police station, after this all happened, Jennifer was asked by the police to act out, to prove that she could wiggle her hands free and then call 911. And she was actually able to show them how she wiggled her hands free and got her phone and then was able to call 911.
So it sounds like she had to kind of do this acting out to prove that she, in fact, was a victim of this crime.
You know, she was either able to do this because it's actually what happened, or she was able to do it because she had practiced and possibly set this up as well. I think that's the thing that the police are trying to find out when they're asking a potential victim to show how they escaped, is there's a little bit of suspicion there about whether or not this story that she's telling the police is credible.
And yeah, Connor, I mean, you're an investigative reporter. How often do you think police look at everyone involved? I mean, on the outside, Jennifer would look like a victim, but they have to kind of look at every single person who is in this house, as you know, she might have information that she doesn't even know she has.
Yeah, I think police generally first go to what is the easiest explanation. The easiest explanation is not usually that a suburban house is attacked by a bunch of random people and that one of the victims is able to wiggle their hands free and call 911. That maybe happens in movies, but it doesn't often happen in real life. And so I think it's not surprising that police were a little bit suspicious as they're trying to figure out. I think the fact that the car keys were left on the table sends alarm bells to investigators as well. And I'm sure there were other things about the scene that were off. And so not surprisingly, you know, they immediately want to identify who in this scene could be telling the truth and who in the scene could be lying.
In a stroke of good news, Mr. Pan survived the attack. Sadly, though, he remained in a medically induced coma. Without any evidence to go off, police reviewed the 911 call and noticed something odd. As Jennifer is talking to dispatchers, Mr. Pan screams for help and runs out the front door, all while Jennifer is calling out to him. Police wondered what kind of father would leave their daughter tied up so he could get help.
Police decided to track Jennifer and to see if she led them anywhere. While she didn't go anywhere suspicious, her behavior was abnormal. At her mother's funeral, she didn't seem upset, shedding not a single tear. Jeff, what do you make of that? It seems really strange, right?
Yeah, it's really hard to judge someone, I think, when they're going through something. Everyone grieves differently, as we know. But having covered a fair amount of true crime, the police definitely are looking at everyone involved and how they're reacting to certain things. And whether we like it or not, the detectives probably have a lens of how they think the victim's daughter should be acting.
Yeah, I mean, you can't judge how people are going to react to trauma. That's like such a key point, that people react differently. I do think that that reaction, with some of the other questions about the scene and the getting her arms free and what else is going on, that probably does start to raise alarm bells for investigators.
Her behavior after the murders is at best circumstantial evidence. Is that something that you think detectives would find credible? Can they use that in court? Like, what is your opinion about that?
I think if they aren't able to find any evidence that there was a gang of people or that there was a motive behind this gang coming into this house, you know, investigators are probably looking at all of these other pieces of evidence. The behavior is sort of, okay, well, how do we explain the scene that we've come across? And so, you know, the behavior, the keen on her travels, where she's going, her behavior, you know, it sounds as if investigators didn't believe the story that she was telling them.
Ultimately, what detectives are trying to do is help prosecutors eventually build a case and what is essentially a narrative about what they believe happened in this crime. And her behavior following the murders, if they believe she's a suspect, then that just lends itself to the narrative of she's not a grieving daughter, she didn't cry at the funeral, and that all of that behavior can be presented to the jurors. Whether or not they decide to believe it is a different question.
Yeah, I mean, prosecutors are looking for facts, but they're also looking for a motive, and often motives are emotional. And so if the facts point to something about this murder and this attempted murder that doesn't quite add up. And then you also have the sort of motive and you have the lack of emotion. That is all tools that prosecutors can use to get a conviction in front of a jury.
4 days after the attack, Mr. Pan woke up from his coma and wanted to talk to the police immediately. He had a very different story to tell. According to Mr. Pan, the night of the shooting, he saw Jennifer come downstairs, not tied up. She was talking to the shooters in a friendly manner.
But that's not all. He also told police he had recently discovered his superstar daughter was actually a fraud, a total fraud. Remember how Jennifer had been a straight-A student and gone to a great college and was currently studying in a pharmacy program? None of that was true. Jennifer had forged all of her high school report cards. She had never even graduated from high school. She'd faked her diplomas, her transcripts. She told her parents about classmates and teachers and classes, all of which were made up. She bought textbooks and wrote copious notes, all for show.
It gets worse than that. Instead of going to class every day, she would get on the bus and go to public libraries writing her fake notes. She also got a part-time job tending bar, something her parents had no clue about. She convinced her dad to let her move in with a friend part-time to be closer to campus, but she was actually living with her secret boyfriend, Daniel. And when it came time to graduate, Jennifer told her parents that the extra-large class size meant there weren't enough seats, so graduating students were only allowed one guest. She said she didn't want her parents to feel left out, so she gave her ticket to a friend. I guess the question is, why lie? And why lie to such an extensive degree?
That's a good question. I mean, there's this concept, this idea that of tiger parenting. And tiger parenting is this strict form of parenting where parents are highly invested in ensuring their children's success. Specifically, tiger parents push their children to attain high levels of academic achievement or success. And in one survey, 28% of Asian parents report being tiger parents. Studies have also shown that it doesn't actually create successful students, but just the opposite. How did her parents discover this lie?
Well, Connor, it was all going smoothly until Jennifer told her parents that she was volunteering at a hospital, which meant late nights and weekend shifts, an excuse she made up to see her boyfriend Daniel. Her dad, Mr. Pan, was suspicious as she had no badge or uniform that would indicate she was in fact working or volunteering at this hospital. So one night her parents followed her to what they thought was the hospital, but she didn't end up going there. They then called her roommate who she was supposedly living with, and that roommate fessed up to the lie. Mr. Pan was furious. He basically locked her up at home. He didn't allow her to use a cell phone, a car. She could only leave the house to teach piano, and he would track the mileage on the car to ensure that she was doing just that. To me, that punishment sounds severe for a teenager, let alone a 24-year-old woman. I mean, she's a full-grown adult, and they're treating her like she's a child. Yes, of course she lied to them and that's horrible, but I don't know if the punishment fits the crime in this scenario.
Yeah, there definitely feels like there's more going on in this family, you know, than meets the eye. That locking her up as a teenager, you can sort of understand that response, but she's 24, she's working, she has a boyfriend. I mean, these are all normal things that you would expect a 24-year-old to do as a parent. And obviously you don't like your child lying to you, but locking her up seems extreme.
Let's stop here for another break.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, starting May 6th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With all this information, police brought Jennifer back in for a 9-hour interrogation. This time, she had a new story. She had, in fact, hired hitmen to break into her home, but not to kill her parents. Jennifer had hired them to kill herself. Why, they asked. Jennifer told them she, quote, didn't want to be here anymore. Take a listen to some of her interrogation.
When he came to your room, what discussions did you have with the guy that came to your room? The real discussions you had, not what you told us.
Where was the money? And I showed him where the money was.
Okay. But he obviously said, I'm here to do what you asked.
He never said anything like that.
What did he say?
Just like hands behind your back.
Did he discuss ways with you how he would do it?
No.
Did you request any way for him to do it?
Make sure no one else was around.
Okay. Why didn't they do it the way you wanted?
I don't know. I asked them to take me with my mom when they took them away.
It doesn't seem to make sense.
I know. It doesn't make sense to me.
So what Jennifer is describing is known as suicide by proxy. And suicide by proxy is where a suicidal person uses another person to kill them, effectively committing suicide at the hands of someone else. It's more common with people who entice a police officer to shoot them. But in this case, Jennifer allegedly hired a hitman to kill herself. And suicide is a serious and sadly common act. Nearly 800,000 people die by suicide in the world each year, which is roughly one death every 40 seconds. And suicide is also the second leading cause of death in the world for those aged 15 to 24, like Jennifer.
Yeah, it's really tragic. And as Jennifer's interrogation went on, she explained to the police what went wrong. She said that she had planned to pay the hitman $10,000, but at the last minute she had a change of heart. But the hitman still wanted $10,000. She couldn't pay it, so they showed up and killed her parents instead.
I mean, if that's true, that is so tragic and sad.
Shocked by her story, police brought in Jennifer's boyfriend, Daniel, for questioning. It seemed the couple hadn't lined up their stories because he had a very different version of events. Daniel told detectives that Jennifer did indeed want her parents dead, and he had helped connect her with hitmen. Daniel had started dealing drugs and met them through that. When he mentioned that to Jennifer, it seemed like the perfect solution to her. Jennifer hoped, with her parents out of the picture, she could collect her $500,000 portion of their estate and live happily ever after with Daniel.
Daniel bought her a burner phone, which she sent hundreds of texts to the hitman from. She ended up throwing out the SIM card, but not the phone, which unbeknownst to her, still had the texts. So the police ended up getting tons of evidence against her from this burner phone.
At the trial, Jennifer appeared virtually cheerful, impishly picking lint off her lawyer's clothes. Despite this good nature, Jennifer, Daniel, and the three hitmen were all found guilty on multiple charges, including murder. They won't be eligible for parole for at least 25 years. Before her sentencing, Jennifer's father made a final statement to the court. Quote, "When I lost my wife, I lost my daughter at the same time," he said. "I don't feel like I have a family anymore. Some say I should feel lucky to be alive, but I feel like I am dead too." Because of a no-contact order made by the judge, it would be the last thing Jennifer would ever hear her father say.
Connor, where can listeners find more of your work and follow you on social media?
The current podcast right now that is out is The Lords of Soccer, How FIFA Stole the Beautiful Game. That's available anywhere you listen to podcasts. It tells the history of FIFA's corruption, but also its history of sexism and racism. And we try to explain why this winter we'll be watching the World Cup in Qatar as opposed to what we should have been doing, which was watching the World Cup this past summer in Qatar, and how FIFA's corruption led to that just strange scheduling of events. And we're really excited that Death Island's coming out this fall as well. I think if you are a fan of true crime, both The Lords of Soccer and Death Island are going to be ones that you really want to listen to and check out.
Yeah, Connor, it sounds like Lords of Soccer is not so much a sports podcast, but really a true crime podcast.
Yeah, definitely. You're talking about corruption. You're talking about a whole host of, unfortunately, deaths that have led up to the Qatar World Cup. More than 6,000 people have been killed in building this World Cup infrastructure. And it's very much a true crime podcast. And I think anyone who likes true crime will want to check out The Lords of Soccer.
Shameless plug. If you're enjoying Crazy in Love, leave us a review. And listen to season 3 of our hit series, The Piketon Massacre. Episodes air every Wednesday wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at KT_studios. Crazy in Love is produced by Stephanie Leidecker, Jeff Shane, Chris Graves, and me, Courtney Armstrong. Editing and sound design by Jeff Twa. Crazy in Love is a production of iHeartRadio and KT Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Stay safe, lovers.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.